Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, April 21st, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is a beautiful 64 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. I see we got rain on the way, but that means that the trees will be bursting here in the next couple hours. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, hold on, it caught me by surprise. We titled the show, National Institute of Health funds mass brain recording, monitoring, and implant research. We've been looking at that for the last 2 days, not just the National Institute of Health, but also DARPA's involved. I see a list here as well. Brain Initiative Partners, National Science Foundation, the FDA. We didn't talk about them. Department of Energy, we found out, just signed on. IARPA is in the mix, as well as the White House and a lot of other foundations and universities. What's really interesting is that when we started digging into the funded research, we discovered that right now, absolutely right now, they are working on being able to mass record and monitor, as well as modulate, brains from a large perspective. And we saw that there was a story as well about scientists, neuroscientists calling for a national brain observatory. It was probably one of the most bizarre things I've seen in a long time, where they want a central repository where they can monitor and keep up on, I don't know, there's lots of brains at once. I'm not really sure. I had assumed that it was going to be like a network operations center where they could monitor lots of different probed Internet of Things endpoints, with our brains being one of those endpoints, and be able to diagnose and find if there's future issues, dispatch the hounds to come rescue you if you're having problems. It's just very strange to see that. They were suggesting also that the Department of Energy should be the central location for that. Now that the DOE is hopping into the game and Obama's asking for 45% more money to fund all of this, well, could be interesting to see if our brain operations center or bop, comes into fruition. We're going to continue on this strain with a little bit of a twist today. I've had stories queued up here now for 4 days that keep continuing on and kind of building what I want to get across. There's a story that came out of Big Think, and we talked about this briefly yesterday. This is the apps, and we have the mental health apps that it's one of their big pushes. They want to roll out and get this onto everybody's phone so they could diagnose just by your behavioral patterns whether or not you're going to have an episode here in the near future of some sort of spectrum mental disorder that might need some intervention. Big Think had a story from the 14th. Apps that call for backup before you even know you need it. Ding, ding. This is what we need. We need a nanny in our pockets. The onset of depression is brutal for anyone, but for diabetics who frequently suffer from depression, it can lead to missed medications with potentially life-threatening and even lethal repercussions. And whenever depression descends on anyone, it can be impossible to get help in time. But consider this. With our various electronic devices, we each leave a large digital wake behind. Yes, we do. And phones, for example, contain built-in GPS and health monitoring sensors, ding, ding, that produce a constant stream of data about what we do and where we are. Rick Smolin says that while we figure how to address the downsides of all this data, yeah, screw it, we got all this data, don't worry about it, just keep pumping it out. Well, we figure out how to address the downsides of all this data, primarily the loss of privacy and identity theft. We should also start considering the new possibilities it presents. And we found out yesterday, too, that they now have identified individuals 100% every time in their experiments using their new technology to come up with a quote-unquote brain print, which would be the, I don't know, they gave questions and had people answer these questions. And I guess depending on how you answered those questions, gives them some sort of metrics that then they can rate your brain on, maybe running with a scan cap or something. But yeah, they had 100% success verifying and guessing or figuring out who it was that answered the questions just by the answer. So look out, people. Brain prints are coming. Anyway, back to this app diagnoses. What if an app on a phone already tracks its owner's habits, and it could predict the imminent onset of depression and summon help automatically long before it's too late? The company Smolin cites is an example, and we're going to listen to Rick Smolin in a second. The company's called Ginger.io, and we talked about them the other day when we read the story about the app that alerts and sends in the authorities to help you if you have issues. Ginger.io is still going strong and has an impressive array of testimonials from customers who have harnessed the never-ending stream of data generated by their devices' ever-watchful hardware. What a nice way to put it. Ever watchful hardware, making sure you don't have an incident, because it's like having safety in your pockets every minute of every day. All right, let me join the call. Maybe I won't get an echo today. Hey, doesn't look like it. All right, let's see if we can get this rolling. It's about 2.5 minutes.
Exhaust is probably my least favorite phrase in the big data world, because it sounds like something you're trying to get rid of or something noxious that comes out of the back of your car. But basically, everything we're doing now is being recorded, and it never is going to go away. If you ever plan to run for office, if you're a teenager, remember everything you do, every tweet, every Facebook posting, every picture you put on Instagram will be there forever for journalists and for your competition to dig up. The whole idea of data exhaust is that between our smartphones and our credit cards and our easy passes and all the other things that are collecting information about us, there's this three-dimensional portrait of each of us and who we are. And that is being analyzed and sold to the highest bidder, and it's being used to understand people's movements, behavior patterns. I'll give you an interesting example of that. There's a company in Boston called Ginger.io that has a smartphone app that can predict 2 days before you get depressed that you're going to get depressed. I was very dubious when I first heard about this, and I actually spoke to the gentleman who runs at Anmol, and he said, I said, first of all, how would a smartphone know I'm going to get depressed before I do? And who would want to, I mean, why would somebody even want to know that? And he said, well, actually, first of all, you have a regular pattern of behavior. Basically, each of us has a radius of travel. You know, most of us go to work at the same place. We eat in similar restaurants. We have similar patterns of picking up our kids at school. So the first week, the smartphone app just basically says, this is the radius of travel for Rick. On 2 days before I start getting depressed, my radius of travel starts shrinking. The amount of time I spend at home goes up. The amount of emails and tweets that I send goes down. There's this regular pattern of almost like withdrawal. And the reason that this is actually useful and from a health perspective, and this is what Ginger.io has actually been focusing on, is people with diabetes have a very high correlation with depression. And when you get depressed, people stop taking their medicine. A higher percentage of people.
Now, he's talking exactly what we were talking about yesterday, how they use your behavior and your patterns, and they come up with a baseline of what your typical habits are in a day. And, you know, I mean, there's allowances for differences, but once your pattern starts to get very different, like you don't show up somewhere that you normally do on Tuesdays, or, you know, you typically go online and surf for 2 hours after dinner or something, and when they start recognizing that you are not keeping up on your typical usual patterns. And I think this is some of the same type of technology that they're using when they're doing the license plate scanners. I was just reading about that recently, where they track car license plates and they start to learn the driving patterns and where people go on a daily basis. And when they start to see anomalous behavior in the future, that could be some of the beginnings of pre-crime, is behavioral monitoring. Don't discount that. So I think that's going to be a lot scarier than we think. Start mixing it up, people. Don't be a creature of habit. What this guy is saying is that, you know, then if you get depressed, well, what follows along? Oh, you're not taking your medications. Well, we'll have to make sure we intervene and get you to take your medication. We saw two swallowable electronics in the future, nanobots, but swallowable electronics. Right now, they have the pill for your doctor, and we're going to look at that. And that's a couple ahead here. That'll be able to even tell whether or not you've taken your medication and alert the doctor via wireless signal that you're going to be a problem.
The normal stop taking their medicine. If you have diabetes, the consequences of not taking your medicine are quite severe. Organ failure, blindness, it's quite dramatic. So insurance companies want to make sure that you stay on your medicine. So basically, you sign up for this program if you're diabetic. And it basically says, if it looks like I'm going into one of these depressive episodes a few days from now, let my doctor know, let my kids know, let my spouse know, my friend, just to check in with me to make sure that somebody, you know, comes and notices that. So it's interesting, this idea of this that our phones are starting to know us better than we know ourselves. They're starting to see patterns that we don't detect on a day-to-day basis, but the phone sees this overall pattern, and then it looks for changes in that pattern.
Our phone knows us better than we know ourselves and detects patterns. Now, that should be frightening to you because we've talked about the future of the phone. It's going to move beyond the phone and go into our wearable computing. I called it wearable clothing again yesterday. Wearable computing. And then the next step is going to be the augmented cognition. I saw a story, speaking about freaky and diabetic tracking, Google had come up with a contact lens back, maybe a year or so ago that will allow real-time readings for glucose levels for diabetics. That's how they were going to sell it. Well, You knew it wasn't going to take too long. Samsung just filed a patent for smart contact lenses with a built-in camera. Yes, imagine what we could do with this. Samsung took another step into science fiction. And remember what I said, too? Don't get it close to your eye. Samsung, to boot, is one of those companies we've dug into with lots of ties to DARPA, Google, and they have their own military branch. So, you know, I'd be careful with Samsung. Samsung just took another step into science fiction. South Korea has just granted the tech giant a patent for contact lenses with a display that can project images straight into the user's eye. Ding! The news comes from a Samsung-centric blog called Sam Mobile. The lenses are equipped with a built-in camera and sensors that can be controlled simply by blinking. Content is sent to your smartphone through embedded antennas. And this is where the data is processed. You can have like literal antennas on your eyeball, antennas in your clothing. You'll still be carrying around that dumb, clunky cell phone. Eventually, it'll be all gone. That's the way this is headed. I mean, my prediction is, and I thought we saw something where they already had internet-enabled contact lenses, and I would assume that that's what these have. If they have some sort of antenna that they're connecting, it might even be something like Bluetooth, just like the smart watches that they have out there. So the smart watch, except for the newest one, the ones previous to that actually tethered to your phone. So you got the internet access off your phone, so you didn't need a radio in the watch. But you would tether to your phone to get your internet access. Then you had streaming internet on your little watch in your arm. So I'm assuming that, you know, if they get internet working in your eyeball, it's exactly how they're going to do it, at least for now. And then eventually we found out we're going to have ubiquitous internet everywhere because Facebook, with the new Regina Duggan coming over to work for them, is putting up all of these antennas everywhere. And they're going to be weaving antennas into your clothing. So we could all be hotspots at some point. All right. Let's continue on speaking about Regina Duggan. I don't want to run out of time today because I'm not sure about tomorrow. Got some stuff I have to do this weekend. I have been asked to come aid with a construction project, which, you know, well, shouldn't be too bad as long as everybody stays away from the beer. Construction projects and beer don't go too well together. The U.S. government, this is out of Scientific American, launches a $100 million, quote, Apollo project of the brain. So if we didn't think it could get any worse, well, it just did. The intelligence project aims to reverse engineer the brain to find algorithms that allow computers to think more like humans. Well, you knew that was coming. We read about IBM giving Lawrence Livermore their new supercomputer to play with that was modeled on the human brain after millions of dollars. And we read about deep learning and how they're using this multi-layered ability to make computers think more like humans. Well, here it comes. It's not about your disease or your inability to play video games or move your arms, right? We looked at that yesterday. It's about this. It's about artificial intelligence. That's what this is all about, people. This is not about fixing our diseases or making us better and bringing us back to our former selves if we get injured. It's just not. It's a good side effect. They could use that as the cover up to be able to do all this human experimentation without people crying foul. But that's not what the end result is going to be. 3 decades ago, the U.S. government launched the Human Genome Project, a 13-year endeavor to sequence and map all genes of the human species. And they've also done insects and plants. Although initially met with skepticism and even opposition, right, because now we all have this barcode of life, the project has since transform the field of genetics and is how we ended up with the CRISPR crazies and is today considered one of the most successful scientific enterprises in history. Now, the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, which I guess that's what it's called. I think it should be agency, but it's IARPA, a research organization for the intelligence community modeled after the Defense Department's famed DARPA, has dedicated $100 million to a similarly ambitious project. The Machine Intelligence from Cortical Networks Program, or Microns, see, I read about Microns as being a DARPA project, aims to reverse engineer 1 cubic millimeter of the brain, study the way it makes computations, and then use those findings to inform algorithms in machine learning and artificial intelligence. IARPA has recruited 3 teams led by David Cox, a biologist and a computer scientist at Harvard University, Tae-Sing Lee, a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University, and Andreas Tolias, a neuroscientist at Baylor College of Medicine. We've run across that Andreas before. I'm not sure where, though. Each team has proposed its own 5-year approach to the problem. Microns is, of course, a part of Obama's Brain Initiative, and it's an attempt to push forward the status quo in brain-inspired computing. A great deal of technology today already relies on a class of algorithms called artificial neural networks, ding, ding, which, as their name would suggest, are inspired by the architecture of the brain. And thanks to significant increases in computing power and availability of vast amounts of data on the internet, Facebook can identify faces, Siri can recognize voices, cars can self-navigate, and computers can beat humans in games like chess and Go. These algorithms, however, are still primitive, relying on highly simplified processes of analyzing information for patterns. Humans, on the other hand, seem to overcome these challenges effortlessly. We can make out our friend in a crowd, focus on a familiar voice in a noisy setting, and deduce patterns and sounds or images based on just one handful of examples, and we are constantly learning to generalize without the need for any instructions. And so the Microns research have turned to the brain to find out what these models are missing. And cue up the mad scientist music. Hit that one. I don't know. I don't know any mad scientist music. Each team plans to record the brain's roadmap differently. Cox's team will use a technique called 2-photon microscopy to measure brain activity in rats as they are trained to recognize objects on a computer. The researchers will introduce a modified fluorescent protein, which is sensitive to calcium, into rodents. I was just reading about that, actually. And that was in one of the funded project briefs. They're going to code these proteins with colors. So when the different proteins fire, they light up. So they could tell what chemicals are interacting. When a neuron fires, calcium ions rush into the cell, causing the protein to glow brighter. So using a laser scanning microscope, the researchers will be able to watch the neurons as they are firing. It is a little bit like wiretapping the brain, says Cox, the way you listen in on a phone call to see what's going on. We can listen in on important internal aspects of the brain while the animal is alive and doing something. Yeah, great. Meanwhile, Lee's team plans to take a far more radical path toward mapping the connectome, partnering with George Church, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School. They plan to use what? Oh, we mentioned this, DNA barcoding. Yes, the barcode of life, now that we have the genomics project completed. And they will label every neuron with a unique sequence of nucleotides, and then chemically connect barcodes across synapses to reconstruct circuits. Now, we talked about yesterday when they were saying we had brain blueprints that were 100% individualized to each of us, I had suggested that the brain blueprint might be a good way for authentication to get us onto the Internet of Things, especially when our whole body's going to be bagged and tagged. But listen to this, using DNA barcoding, they'll be able to label every neuron with a sequence of its nucleotides. And then they can make reference diagrams as to what neuron is connected to what neuron, just like a wiring diagram. While this method would not provide the same level of spatial information as microscopy, Lee hopes it will be faster and more accurate, provided that it works. That is, and this technology has never been used before, but if this barcoding technology works, it will revolutionize neuroscience and connectomics. Now, what's frightening about all this is, so our DNA is going to turn into a barcode. It already has been, actually. We covered that back last year sometime about the DNA barcoding. But it's frightening because bagging and tagging every single one of us down to a cellular and a protein level, it's got to make you just sit for a second and think how incredible it is. Yeah, if there weren't evil people in the world that might utilize this to take control or do unethical things with it. But on the other hand, to know that every single biological cell is going to be bagged and tagged and traced and tracked and monitored. And then if there's any anomalies, they're going to dispatch some help because they know you're in trouble or depressed or your brain chemicals are low. Johnny, let's push a button. What kind of a life is that going to be? I mean, I was crying about them taking away my pedal to the metal with the roof open, turning up my tunes on a sunny day with the self-driving car. You know, one of my other bastions of freedom is inside my brain where I can do lots of thinking that I don't have to share with anybody. I do lots of thinking and reading and postulating. That's one of my fun things to do, is exercise my brain. And just think, watching that moth, the cyborg moth, we talked about that when we played that video way back when, but I was just so horrified watching the cyborg moth with these nanowires stuck into its brain as they're pushing buttons and remote controlling it, making it do things it didn't want to do as it's struggling because it can't understand why someone has control over its motor functions. That's going to be us. That's going to be us someday. There's a story that I caught right before I crashed out last night that I want to add to this. Cell phone principles. So again, asking that same question, how are they going to bag and tag us on a cellular level? Cell phone principles help microfluidic chips digitize information on living cells. Phone calls and text messages reach wherever you want because your phone has a unique identifying number that sets you apart from everybody else on the network. Researchers of the Georgia Institute of Technology are using a similar principle to track cells being sorted on microfluidic chips. The technique uses a simple circuit pattern with just three electrodes to assign a unique 7-bit digital identification number for each and every cell that passes through the channels on the microfluidic chip. Now think about this. You know, it's a little chip that they're probably thinking they're going to use in the labs where they could put it inside of a tube or something and let all the cells run through it so they can identify, bag, and tag them. But how long is it going to be once they get this all perfected and working until they just put something like that inside your bloodstream to do an inventory and bag and tag it, send it out via wireless, give them a map of your cellular makeup? And every single cell in your body is going to have its own little mini 7-bit barcode. How cool is that? It's not. This new technique also captures information about the size of cells and how fast they are moving. And the identification and information could allow for automated counting and analysis of cells being sorted. There we go, people, doing a cellular inventory. The research reported in the journal Lab on a Chip could provide the electronic intelligence that might one day allow inexpensive labs on a chip, another DARPA project, to conduct sophisticated medical testing outside the confines of a hospital and clinics. The technology can track cells with better than 90% accuracy already in a 4-channel chip. So imagine what it's going to be. I mean, this is like prototyping. We got 90% accuracy. Imagine what it's going to take here in 6 months. They're going to be already doing future predictions at more than 100%. It's just, I can't even keep up with the insanity. It says we are digitizing information about the sorting done on a microfluidic chip. And by combining microfluidics, electronics, and telecommunications principles, which two of the three of those are what I did for a living, we believe that this will help address a significant challenge on the output side of lab-on-a-chip technology. You know, this isn't what my area of expertise was supposed to turn into. I always found biology pretty interesting, and psychology in the brain was really interesting because I've been able to bust a lot of assholes that way, just knowing how psychopaths' brains work. But I'm going to tell you, I was not, and on my wildest dreams, was I really ever thinking that telecommunications and computing were going to be integrated with medicine down to a DNA level in humans in our lifetime. Never. Microfluidic chips use the unique biophysical or biochemical properties of cells and viruses to separate them. And for instance, antigens can be used to select bacteria or cancer cells and route them into separate channels. Says, by judiciously aligning the grid pattern, we can generate codes and locations to choose when the cells pass us by. So we're going to be able to control them. And the positive and negative charges from the intermingled electrical circuits create a unique identifying digital signal as each cell passes by. And the sequence of ones and zeros are attached to the information about the impedance change. This unique identifying signal from multiple cells can be separated and read by a computer, allowing scientists to track not only the properties of the cell, but also how many cells have passed through the channel. So this is very exciting. This is like putting a USB port on a microfluidic chip. Our technique could turn all of the microfluidic manipulations that are happening on the chip into quantitative data related to diagnostic measurements. So there you go. Yeah, people, it's coming. All right, so now you want to talk about medicine. Mad science gone mad. Swallow that chip. We're going to crank it up. Regina Duggan, 2013, at the D11 conference, talking about electronic tattoos and edible passwords. And this has all come to pass. This is just a mere less than 3 years ago. This was published on June 1st, 2013. Here, let's listen to this.
You have brought a couple of things that you're,
the Advanced Technology and Projects Group, ATAP.
Your Advanced Technology team that Dennis hired you wisely, by the way, to do. you've brought a couple of things that you're working on. And can you talk about them? Can you show them and talk
about
them?
Sure. Well, you know, lots of people talk about innovation in this space as if the big innovations have already happened. I think that's a lack of imagination, frankly. There are so many unsolved problems, and there are so many opportunities that can be realized by the advances in the tech here. So let's just take one really important problem, one driving application, in this case, authentication. Authentication is irritating. In fact, it's so irritating only about half the people do it. Right? Despite the fact that there's a lot of information about you on your smartphone, which makes you far more prone to identity theft than if you didn't otherwise have it there. Right?
Now, ding, so we're talking about authentication, and we're talking about the future of authentication with these brain prints and being able to scan cells and voice patterns, your cell phone collecting all this data. that then can be used to tell whether or not you're depressed because they're watching your behavioral analytics. She touches on all this stuff in regards to things that they are working on at DARPA. Here we go.
Right.
So you're talking about passwords and pins and the drawing patterns and on
Android. Well, sure. Look, after 40 years of advances in computation, we're still authenticating basically the same way we did years ago. In fact, it's gotten worse because now you don't do it once a day or twice a day. The average user does it 39 times a day, and it takes them 2.3 seconds every time they do it. Power users would do it up to 100 times a day. So what are we doing about that? Well, we're thinking of a whole variety of options for how you could do better at authentication. So you can start with nearer term things like tokens or fobs that might have NFC or Bluetooth embedded in them. But you can also think about a means of authentication that you could simply wear on your skin every day for a week at a time, say an electronic tattoo. Now, we're talking about wearables. Everybody's interested in wearables. I'm profoundly interested in wearables.
Ding.
And what I will tell you is that there are we've made a lot of advances in wearables, but there's still some fundamental problems that we haven't solved. Like one of them is the mechanical mismatch between humans and electronics, right? So electronics are boxy and rigid, humans are curvy and soft. That's a mechanical mismatch problem. Well, a researcher at the University of Illinois, his name is Dr. Rogers, what he discovered is that he could use standard CMOS techniques to make islands of high-performance silicon connected by accordion-like structures that would allow it to stretch up to 200% and still be performing. And what he did is he founded a company and they started making electronic tattoos. So I'm wearing one here on my arm.
Do we have a camera to get a...
This is a developmental system made by MC10, and it has an antenna and some sensors embedded in it. And what we plan to do is work with them to advance a tattoo that could be used for authentication. Now,
it's so frightening is that we just were reading about wearable computing a few days ago and how Project Jacquard that she was responsible for at DARPA, as a matter of fact, where they're weaving these antennas in different patterns depending on what type of thing that you wanted to connect to and what your distance was. And if you look into antenna technology, there's tons of them. I had my wireless certification at one point, and I had no idea that there were that many types of antennas. But you could have these wires woven into clothing. This is something that they're working on now, so your computing would be ubiquitous, but you could use that then to connect to other things. So whether it be you're connecting to just wireless or you're authenticating to things, you're connecting to your wireless camera contact lenses, or to your little device that's inside of you scanning, bagging and tagging your cells to report to your doctor, your drug levels. That's all on the way. And these smart pills that she talks about next are already out on the market. And I have the manufacturer's website up here. So let's hear the rest of what Regina Duggan has to say.
It may be true that 10 to 20-year-olds don't want to wear a watch on their wrist, but you can be sure that they'll be far more interested in wearing an electronic tattoo, if only to piss off their parents. Right?
And that can have a design, right?
Because sure.
They would certainly want some kind of cool design.
Options, right? Options. And that's something that you wear, but you could also imagine including authentication in just your daily habits. So I take a vitamin every morning. What if I could take vitamin authentication?
What?
Vitamin authentication. Look, I have one right here. Well, here, I'll let you hold it. Would you like to hold it?
I'll hold it.
Okay. So, this...
You guys see it?
This pill has a small chip inside of it with a switch. It also has what amounts to an inside-out potato battery. When you swallow it, the acids in your stomach serve as the electrolyte.
That's what I do.
And they power it up, and the switch goes on and off. And it creates an 18-bit ECG-like signal in your body, and essentially your entire body becomes your authentication token.
An 18-bit ECG-like signal inside your body using your stomach acid to turn it into a little potato battery, and once you swallow it, it fires right up.
Yes, this is true. Okay.
Okay, but...
Okay, so wait. But, so it's really true. So what this means is that that becomes my first superpower. I really want this superpower.
Yeah,
it means that my arms are like wires. My hands are like alligator clips. When I touch my phone, my computer, my door, my car, I'm authenticated in. First superpower. Like, I want that.
So we're not shipping.
Wait, did she just say my car, my door? You know, I've talked about that. Once everything gets to be smart, smart homes, smart self-driving cars, your electronic money that is in your universal basic income account that's coming here in the next few years after robots take all the jobs. You know, we used to think it was going to be a fingerprint or an iris scan or some sort of, you know, I was even talking about the behavioral analytics and how all of us have these patterns, the ways we do things that we can be identified with. We found out now we have the brain print. We found out also we have... the other thing we just found out. I don't know. I'm sure there's all kinds of biometrics, even your voice print and the modulation of your voice could be used, but it's going to be something like this now. They're going to use this stuff to get the technology inside of us. So it's going to be not only your authentication token, but this is going to be the way that they're going to have the little nanobot doctors. You know, we've had Kurzweil talk about this a whole bunch of times. I'm actually thinking tomorrow... Like I mentioned, I have some help I have to go give for the weekend. We have a ceiling to put up. It's not going to be fun, but I want to get moving early tomorrow. And I found and listened to last weekend a brand new interview by Michio Kaku. And I know you guys all think he's a shill. I've heard Michio say things that have really disappointed me because I always kind of liked him. But one thing that Michio is good at talking about is the future of what is coming in this technology. And I think he knows a lot more. Then, you know, we kind of look at it as he's talking about, you know, future fantasy. But I think he knows a lot more about what's really going on in the back rooms than we give him credit for. So I might actually cut that for tomorrow with a little intro and outro. And we're going to listen to Michio talk about all the bad things they're going to do to us in the future. All right. So back to Regina Duggan and finishing with her superpowers. So it's going to be her superpowers. I'm going to back this up just a little bit. As she says, your doors and your cars. I knew that was a part of all this, and it is. You know, the day that you, Johnny, start to have deviant thoughts while they are mass monitoring our neuro circuits, which, you know, we read about that the last 2 days, at their National Brain Surveillance Center, is that what they call it? The National Brain Observatory. When they determine that Johnny is having deviant thoughts, all they're going to have to do is turn off his access to any of his superpowers. Now, Johnny, what are you going to do? You can't get into your house. You can't get into your car. You can't get any money qubits out of your universal basic income account. How are you going to eat? How are you going to sleep? How are you going to protect yourself or keep yourself safe or get any of your belongings? Because we've just taken control, Johnny.
My arms are like wires. My hands are like alligator clips. When I touch my phone, my computer, my door, my car, I'm authenticated in. First superpower. Like, I want that.
So we're not shipping that right away.
Yeah, no. We're not shipping that right away. But it
but
sounds
is it,
like...
Is it, this is FDA cleared?
So here's the thing. This is not science fiction. This pill was actually made by a company called Proteus. And they've developed it for medical applications. That pill has been CE stamped and cleared by the FDA. You can take 30 of those per day for the rest of your life.
And then what happens? Does your heart
nothing
beat change? Does your
we can just tell that you've taken the pill. I mean, the medical app.
Yeah.
The medical application.
Does Google now know everything I do and everywhere I go? Because let's
ding ding.
Here,
we like
just,
you guys, but you're from Google.
Just give him some water and let him take that pill right now.
Thanks.
Maybe.
So even more interesting is this is while Regina Duggan was at Google. So she had already left DARPA, gone to Google, and Google is working on developing the superpower swallowable authentication pill. How crazy is that? I'm sure probably was something they started at DARPA and then just sprinkled it over and let her carry over the technology because that's where the Google Life Sciences division comes in. She was part of the ATAP program, though, which was the moonshots for doing wearables and mobile technology. So interesting that though they were working on these swallowable pills. Of course, they'll be used for medical applications. We're going to look at that in about 10 seconds when she's done.
Dennis, let me ask you. Does Larry make you take one of these?
It's optional. So we actually have demoed this working and authenticating a phone.
Yeah.
So this isn't like total.
It actually does authenticate.
And again, this isn't stuff that's going to ship anytime soon, but I think having the boldness to think differently about problems that everybody has every day is really important for Motorola now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people now, again, we're trying to get the company in that mindset to think big again. And it's early, but we're excited about where it's going.
And even weirder, this is when Motorola was part of that division. That was the ATAP was the Motorola division. They ended up getting into a spat with Motorola and they sold that whole segment off. And then we found that they were doing some work with Samsung after that. So I don't know, but that went into development. It was already FDA approved. The company is Proteus Digital Health. I bet you if we dug into it, we'd find out that they were some new startup that spun off with sprinkle dollars. But Proteus, you can go to their website, proteus.com, proteus.com. And where did that just go? I was at how does this work? Here it is. How it works. How does Proteus Discover work? Well, Proteus Discover works like this. Proteus Discover provides you and your healthcare professional with clear, objective data to assist in reaching your treatment goals. Now, as we see socialized healthcare roll across the country, and I just saw a second large nationwide insurer has now pulled out of Obamacare. Because, of course, what did they discover? Oh, the people that signed up for Obamacare, the ones, i.e., who didn't have insurance, tend to be sicker than the general population. So now they're having their asses handed to them. The insurance companies, not the patients. Oh, the patients probably are, too. Because now these big insurers are pulling out of the program. So you didn't have choices before. Costs were a lot higher, and now you have less choices than you had previously. I think it's going to be a big debacle, and maybe that was by design, so we could then swoop in and use like the VA healthcare system to spread out across the country or something, with IBM Watson running it all on the back end. I don't know. Something's coming. Something is definitely coming, because this is not sustainable. But look, if we have all this technology, we can monitor millions of people with a small number of doctors, all at remote locations and one central observatory, just like the National Brain Observatory. Well, we could also have a National Medical Observatory with doctors, surgeons, and specialists all ready and waiting with their 3D VR goggles on to have a conversation with you in real time as they are seeing your real-time statistics being sent to them over your wireless connectivity that is woven in your clothing. Proteus Discover provides you and your healthcare professional with clear, objective data to assist in reaching your treatment goals. You wear the patch, you take your medicines as prescribed by your doctor, and gain insight into your own patterns, listen, ding, of medication taking, steps, rest, heart rate, blood pressure, and weight. And remember, when we first started talking about this, and this bagging, tagging, and tracking of your quote-unquote health statistics, it was with that Fitbit, right? They wanted everybody to get a Fitbit on, and let's have a social network so we can compete with our friends. You did more steps than I did, Johnny. And now we have insurance companies giving kickbacks. Well, you know, if you stay healthy and take this exercise program, we'll give you $250 off of this year's insurance premium. Well, you know what it's going to be in the future? Just like they want to do with cars. You have the black box in the car. Some of the new technologies already for fleet vehicles are using those black boxes to send real-time data back to the insurance companies to make sure, A, you're not speeding, B, you're not doing erratic movements, C, you're not going where you're not supposed to. Well, let's put that now in the hands of the health insurance companies. Oh, Johnny, don't eat those Doritos. Otherwise, for every Dorito, we're going to have to raise your premium 50 cents because statistically speaking, you're going to end up with more health problems because you're not taking care of yourself. Oh, don't eat that ice cream, Johnny. You're going to get an extra pound on, and that's going to put you over the top. And then you're going to move into a new class of problem insured. I mean, you could see where this is headed. There's not going to be any freedom at all. If they can take, right now, they could take your Shoppers Club's cards, and they could see that you bought ice cream and cookies. But you know what? You could just as easily not get the discounts. Don't use your cards and pay cash and do it anonymously. Though they'd still probably get you on surveillance camera. Make sure you wear a baseball cap. But in the future, when you have some sort of device inside of you, like these Proteus pills, or they're even doing the tattoos, as a matter of fact, just like Regina Duggan talked about, you know, you're not going to be able to hide anything when they can read every little bit of chemical composition that's gone into your body as well as all of your exercising patterns. It says your healthcare professionals will also gain insight into these patterns outside of the clinical setting in order to determine the best course of treatment for you. Yes, whether or not we need to send the white shirts to hold you down and force you to take your medication. Patients use the Discover application on a mobile device to keep track of their medications, steps, activity, rest, heart rate, blood pressure, and weight. And patients can also set medication reminders to help manage drug regimens. Healthcare professionals use the Proteus Discover portal to review a patient's data to gain insight that helps determine the best treatments for them. So how does this technology work? Well, the first way you could do it is the pill. Yes, the pill. Healthcare professionals will prescribe sensor-enabled pills. These contain an ingestible sensor the size of a grain of sand, which then sends a signal to the patch, so they're using them both in conjunction. After it reaches the stomach, patients and their healthcare teams can see when a medication has been taken. Ding, 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 ding. Take your medication, Johnny. By using this ingestible sensor, the ingestible sensor is the result of innovative manufacturing that combine high-volume semiconductors and pharmaceutical technologies. It is made of elements that are found in a normal diet, so it's not poison, at least that we don't know of, and has been cleared for marketing by the FDA and the CE marked in Europe. The ingestible sensor has a detection rate of 97.3% of ingestions and 100% accuracy of pill identification. So they're going to know whether or not you took your drugs. And don't worry about it, because if you didn't, we're sending someone down because it could be a danger to you. Didn't we just find that out? Those diabetics not taking their medication could be very dangerous as they start to go into a depression. And we can tell by your behavioral analytics. I mean, this is just beyond lunacy. So how's the patch work? Well, this comfortable patch with a sensor inside records the time a patient swallows each sensor-enabled pill, as well as the rest and activity patterns. This information is then recorded and relayed to the patient and, with their permission, ding, to their healthcare team. The patch is designed for comfort and ease of use and is informed and refined by 5 years of user research. Developed by a team of human-centered designers and engineers, this is also an FDA-cleared sensor and tracks medication taking, steps, activity, rest, and heart rate. So I don't know what else to say about that. But you know what? It's coming, people. It's absolutely coming. So to add insult to injury, let's take a look. I don't know. Where do we kick this puppy off? We only got a couple minutes left. Well, I found a story. So We're talking about ubiquitous sensors everywhere and making us a node on the Internet of Things. We found that they have come up with ways now to bag and tag us, if not with some sort of brain blueprint. Well, they also have the ability to barcode all of our cells and the proteins and identify every DNA strand, all of our proteins that make up our DNA as an individual, and give us a number. Give us all kinds of numbers. And then they can monitor all that stuff and then send that monitoring information to some sort of central monitoring facility. Well, where do we start reading about all this originally? Back when I first started on the radio, I think I did my first show sometime in 2011, right about now. I was on talking about smart dust and some of the craziness that I've been reading about. Smart dust was something that I learned about through HP. I had been an HP lead engineer for quite a number of years and had dug into a lot of their technology that they were doing. And smart dust was something that HP had spent a lot of years and a lot of money developing, trying to get off the ground, as well as others. You know, they were working with the feds, I'm sure. We found out that was before I really knew about DARPA and how DARPA functioned. But I'm sure that there were sprinkle funding put around. There was probably an RFP put out looking for corporations and private institutions to develop something that they had their sights on. And then, you know, everybody bids. And if you are the lowest bidder, they usually pick you. Well, here's a document that came out August 19, 2015, and we might have to save this one for Monday. It might be where we start, but we'll end it up here. Smart dust may become the pinnacle innovation of the Internet of Things. Ding, ding, da-ding, ding, ding. Smart dust is everywhere, I have a feeling. Gartner still believes, this is that Gartner, the one who puts out the future predictions for technology, Gartner still believes that dust will eventually be smart. Now, we've seen an uptick, and at least I have, a lot of people complaining about the massive chemtrails. There's been lots of illnesses, too. By the way, Alan Watts is extremely ill right now. If anyone knows anyone who knows him, I don't know. I'm getting a little worried about Alan. But there have been a lot of complaints about mass chemtrails. I've seen Aurora Flying Rainbow Lasagna posting about it on a daily basis out of California. Some of my friends in Texas have been sending pictures. There's a lot going on. And in the very beginning, when I first started learning about smart dust, I had postulated in 2011 whether or not they could spray that aerially over us, potentially, in whatever those things are that we call chemtrails. Well, listen to this. A cloud of nanoparticles washes through a field, and tiny sensors gather data on variance in air current, moisture, and temperature. The pH balance of the water and the soil is constantly monitored, and the growth rate, health, and sustainability of the crop is continually assessed. The dust of nanoparticles, some may call it smart dust, can detect invaders in the field, be it a disease infecting the crops, small animals, or humans, and dispatch another cloud of dust to combat the threat. Smart dust may seem like an idea out of science fiction, but the technology behind the concept is very real. And in fact, DARPA, ding, started doing tests on the concept of smart dust during the early 1990s. And I started reading about smart dust a long time ago, but it really only became a reality with technology over the last 20 years or so. And typically over the last five has it been like, let it out into the wild. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because it is Thursday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. Ryan live tonight. Game on at 7 behind the woodshed this week's at 8 p.m. Eastern at 10. SM Gibson with Anti-Media Radio. All right, guys.